Advertising your business with GCN is simple, effective,
and more affordable than you might think.
Visit advertise.gcnlive.com for more info. Take your business to the next level.
Following is a live copyrighted presentation. Ladies and gentlemen, it's time now for RadioLawTalk.com with your host, Frederick Penny, attorney at law. And now, RadioLawTalk.com.
Well, it's still good morning here from our palatial studios. Coming at you on the airwaves, online, Radio Law Talk, and online at RadioLawTalk.com. My name is Todd Kunin. I am filling in for Fred Penny today. He is on assignment. To my right, Denise Dirks. Denise, it's hour number three. We're starting. How we doing?
Good.
Good, good.
Yeah, we're doing really good. We're just kind of sliding right into hour three, actually.
We are. I don't know why it is, but when we start out, I always feel like I'm on an airplane, like I'm one of those people giving the announcements or something. We've just started, the pilot has turned off the fasten seatbelt sign. We've started hour number three here on Radio Law Talk. Feel free to get up and move about the cabin.
We're starting our descent
into madness. This is where the wheels start to come off, folks. So if you'd like to call and participate in the show, 855-529-7234. That's 855-LAW-RADIO. Although by the time you get to the O in radio, you've already dialed the number. 855-529-7234. I forgot to mention also, Cal, you're behind the glass with us. How are
you?
Hi. Look, I'm getting one word answers here today. Denise, how you doing? Good.
Good.
Well, Cal, how you doing? Hi.
I just thought I'd ad lib a little to help out.
I feel like I'm talking to my 15-year-old son. Right? How was school today? Good.
Yeah.
Okay. You know, it's time.
Did you attend, but via Zoom? No.
No. kids in their video games, they get so locked in. Hey, buddy, it's time to go to sleep. I slept 3 days ago.
Yeah.
Right. Do you want some food? I ate last week.
I think one of the best answers I've ever heard to that was I think it was on The Tonight Show, where Carson asked a question. The guy goes, yeah. And Johnny Carson goes, oh, you ad-lib a lot, don't you?
I think that might have been Charles Grodin.
Oh, yeah. There's somebody. Yeah.
Yes.
Well, Grodin had this shtick that he and Carson did. Yes. And then it bled over into Letterman, where Grodin would come on and try to be like the worst guest possible. But it was a bit that they had. But he never broke character. It was the funniest stuff that I had seen on The Tonight Show, right up there with Carnac for me. But so we got stuff to cover this hour. We're going to talk a little about the Supreme Court. One other case dealing with bifurcation. We're talking about bifurcation at the end of the last hour. We got one other case involving Robert De Niro. And that's a recent one that Denise is going to let us know what's going on with that. Like it's a Supreme Court case, Fourth Amendment cases we can talk about. But before we do that, we have one more case or no case.
We do. You ready for it?
I am ready.
Okay, this one will be just a regular two-pointer. Here we go. Case or no case starting now.
Now it's time to play Case or No Case.
Yeah. So you've all heard the advertising slogan, Red Bull gives you wings. One Red Bull customer sued them for false advertising because he said Red Bull drinks did not give him enough energy. Now, nobody thought Red Bull would really give you wings, but this man was upset, and he decided that gives you wings things just wasn't literal enough. He wanted more pow. So he called a lawyer to see if Red Bull should give him more energy. So, Todd, I think it's your turn to answer.
It is.
Did a person sue the drink maker because it didn't make him have the jitters?
It did not give him wings. He was not able to, as the Steve Miller Band says, fly like an eagle.
Or a beagle.
You know, or like Sammy Hagar says, where eagles fly. Yes. I got a million of them. Okay. Okay, so here's what I'm going to say. I'm going to say that I believe that this is a case. And it wouldn't surprise me if this ended up being a class action because it's an advertising. Probably a lot of people purchased based upon the claiming false advertising that I was supposed to get this pep in my step or whatever because of that. So I'm going to say it is a case, and I'm going to say that it results in some settlement of some type. It does not get adjudicated in Red Bull's favor completely. There is some settlement that is reached where the plaintiff receives something.
Okay. Okay. Denise, what say you? Does Red Bull give you wings, or should it?
I don't think it should. So I think it's just a slogan. It's not a promise. And I think that, now there was a rumor, and I'm not sure if this was ever true, so I'm not saying this is true. But there was a rumor that Red Bull used to contain amphetamine. Back, you know, in the day before it was illegal.
That'll give you wings.
Yes, and that'll give you energy. So,
or make you think you have them.
I'm going to say it's not a case.
Okay, fair enough. So, Todd, you say yes. Denise, you say nay.
Yes, I said yes, it's a case, and some settlement was reached.
Okay, well, here's what I did. I looked this up on Snopes to see, was this really a case or not? And I got clapping. Let me get the other one. Okay, they're all queued up. Everything's fine. So, Denise, you said it was not a case, and Todd, you said it was a case. So, Todd, this is for you.
This is for me.
Oh,
and
dang
Denise,
it.
Denise, this is for you.
Okay. So what was the case?
Well, I'll tell you, most people do expect the drink to energize them, according to Snopes. Eventually, the Red Bull Corporation offered the individual a settlement. Reportedly, though, they maintain they didn't really think they were on the wrong side of this, but they awarded $13 million to their customers, which would give anybody wings, I would think. Of course, they all ended up getting a $10 cash deal or a certificate for Red Bull products worth $15. And the lawyer sat there going, that's right, my people. That's right. Keep, because he got paid, of course, for all of that. And Red Bull agreed to avoid unpredictability and the high cost of litigation. And they, millions of customers got their cost, $13 million it cost them to do this. So that's just what happened. It was a case and the litigants won. And that is... case or no case? Final one for the show today.
Final one for the show.
So he got 2 points because it wasn't an extra point case.
Right, it's a two-pointer, yeah.
And you know what that means?
It was so easy. What, he has 50 points now?
No, it means that Todd pulled out ahead of me.
Todd Kunin is in the lead going into the back stretch.
It's really disappointing for me.
Phrasing. Okay, so... oh, my gosh. You know,
easy.
Your brain works in a certain way.
Or maybe not works.
I'm just not. Hey, you know, we have law cases here. So, Denise, we were talking about bifurcated trials. This is just a segue into this next case. Robert De Niro is in the legal news. What's going on with Mr. De Niro?
Well, he's been going through a divorce for over 3 years. And it's in Manhattan, in New York, and I guess because of COVID, it hasn't been completed. But he has been paying his soon-to-be ex-wife between $375,000, and recently it has gone down to just $100,000 a month.
Per month?
Per month.
How does she get by?
Well, it's a struggle time.
Yes.
Well,
you know. And he's 77 years old. And he has a 7-year-old daughter with her. And so he...
Attaboy.
you sit there and you think about this. Can you make a 77-year-old man continue to work at the level that he's worked during this marriage? And that's going to be one of the questions that's going to come up. And there's not an answer to that yet, but there will be. Then what was interesting about this case is that they had a prenuptial agreement. And at some point, this prenuptial agreement's going to... quote unquote kick in, but first they have to determine the validity of the prenuptial agreement. And so that's the bifurcated issue. Is it a valid prenuptial agreement or is it not? And if it's valid, what are the terms? And if it's not, it's going to be a free-for-all.
Yeah, I think the hear it. Is he still wrong? We're going to answer those questions when we come back for the second section of our third hour on Radio Law Talk. You want to chime in, 855-529-7234.
As a Facebook post said, I said something with my wife, and she said, you're right. now what do I do? We'll be right back. Commercials and other announcements aired on Radio Law Talk contain the opinions of the sponsor. The airing of said announcements on Radio Law Talk does not constitute an endorsement. The announcements may contain claims that are not intended to treat, diagnose, or cure any disease.
These claims have not been evaluated by the FDA.
I've got to get my car washed. The dirt, it just won't do.
The best thing about Quick Quick Car Wash is whenever you go through, the smell on your car is always great, and they have super fun lights and colors.
But I don't have no time today. I don't know what I do.
Your car smells good and it's clean at Quick Quick Car Wash.
And I know this place right down the road.
Quick 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 Quack Car Wash.
Quick Quack Car Wash.
Get the Quick Quack confidence.
Hop inside, let's take a ride and watch this cannon shine.
Get the Quick Quack habit. Take your car once a week.
Just come and see, I guarantee your ride will steal the show.
I like Quick Quack because of the mascot, Quackles.
Come on, Quick Quack Car Wash.
So we sell unlimited membership for per vehicle. You can add a family plan and add an additional vehicle at a discounted rate.
Don't drive that dirty car. Quick Quack Car Wash.
Wayne Elliott here to tell you about my experience with Strauss Naturals Heart Drops over the past 20 years. Strauss Heart Drops saved me back then and changed my life forever. It's hard to describe how invigorating it is when you support your healthy blood flow everywhere. There is scientific evidence that Heart Drops ingredients help maintain healthy lipid concentration. Cholesterol is in the blood lipid group. This supports blood flow, our body's most important function. I was able to maintain a healthy heart and blood flow. Strauss Heart Drops work, I can assure you. No contraindications with pharma drugs. Strauss Heart Drops are safe, and Strauss guarantees your satisfaction with a hassle-free guarantee so you can't go wrong and certainly have nothing to lose. I've seen folks taking Heart Drops that have greatly improved their lives. Available online at StraussNaturals.com. Thank you very much.
These products may not be right for you.
Complement your health with hemp-derived cannabinoid oil. We've always believed that the closer to Earth, the better it is for our bodies. Our hemp-derived cannabinoid oil is phytocannabinoid-rich, full-spectrum, and organically grown. Finally, hemp made easy, clean, and effective. GCNHemp.com or call 877-878-4203. That's right, we cut through the red tape. It's now available at GCNHemp.com or call 877-878-4203.
We've entered a time where sky truly is the limit and opportunity awaits. The Internet has become a platform of everyone's worldwide communications. Billionaires building businesses on platforms that didn't even exist a generation ago. But in the sea of noise, how can the voice of your business be heard? The secret is over 100 years old. Radio, 228% more effective than TV. That's 228% more effective than television. Brick and mortar and cyber businesses alike have found radio to be the most effective for building a brand and delivering customers. Learn the secrets of radio advertising by calling 877-996-4327 or email advertise@gcnlive.com. That's advertise@gcnlive.com.
Do you want to give you and your loved ones premium nutrition right now? Hi, I'm Jamel Bookaboo from TeamG'day.com and the GCN Longevity Health Team. Get your premium nutrition formulated by world-renowned naturopathic doctor, Dr. Joel Wallach at wholesale, or also become a distributor and earn income while supporting this broadcast. Go to TeamG'day.com via the shopping cart or contact form, and I'll get back to you with support personally. That's TeamG'day.com with Longevity. TeamG'day.com.
Boys are weird.
That's true. Not literally.
Now it's time for more Radio Law Talk.
So, you know, Denise, do you remember, or Cal, either the two of you, or anybody listening, if you want to call in, do you remember, it was shortly after President Trump took office in 2017, and, you know, he was a prolific user of Twitter up until earlier this year. But In early on in his presidency, there were some people that were very critical of him and his policies, and they would tweet in response to tweets he had put out. And so President Trump blocked them on Twitter. And do you recall the brouhaha that came up as a result of that, of the sitting president blocking people on Twitter?
Sure, because people were saying that's a public account. It belongs to the people. You're the president of all the people, not just the ones you happen to choose. So that's what we're going to do. I mean, that was the response, I believe, was it not?
Yeah, pretty much. There was a group called Knights First Amendment Institute, and seven other individuals brought a lawsuit. And essentially, they're claiming First Amendment. Look, if you block us from Twitter, you're blocking our ability to speak in a public forum to you, our elected representative. And so they filed that lawsuit. They achieved an injunction keeping President Trump from blocking them on Twitter in the trial court, and then it got appealed to the Second Circuit Court of Appeals. The Second Circuit Court of Appeals upheld the ruling. And then it was appealed by the Trump administration up to the U.S. Supreme Court. And mind you, this all happened in 2017. And the case, up until about a week ago, was still sitting before the U.S. Supreme Court. Still sitting, 4 years later, still before the Supreme Court, where the Supreme Court had yet to make a determination about whether or not they were going to put it on their docket and hear oral argument, or remand it back with no action, you know, whether it's going to grant certiorari, whether they're going to hear it, are they not?
Or just not hear it and let the ruling stand.
Exactly. They could do that. And they finally addressed it, I believe this past week, maybe a week before. No, this past week. And this is what they did. Now, mind you, that at this point, even lawyers for the Trump administration had sent notice to the court that they believed, and mind you, this is the Trump administration's appeal of the lower court ruling. They filed with the court requesting that the court dismiss the case because the issue is now moot. Or as Joey Tribbiani and friends would say, the issue is now moo. It's a moo point. because it comes from Cow. There's actually an episode of that. Yeah, it's a moot issue because here's the thing. It doesn't matter now what Trump's Twitter account is. First, he doesn't have a Twitter account. It's suspended. I don't know if it's indefinitely or not. But second, even if he did, he's no longer the president. He can block anybody he wants.
And thirdly, what are they going to do about it?
And so there's no issue before them. And so the Supreme Court sent it back to the Second Circuit with an order to dismiss the case. So the Supreme Court's not going to hear it. The Second Circuit's ruling doesn't apply. All they have is the ruling from the trial court, but it doesn't apply anymore. But
it's not precedent.
It doesn't set precedent. It's not something that a future person could come in. Like, let's say, hypothetically, Joe Biden decided he was going to block somebody on Twitter, and then somebody could say, well, in the landmark case of Knight First Amendment Institute versus Trump, there's no precedential value set there. But I think there was an interesting thing in the language stated by Justice Thomas, who, now mind you, he agreed this case should be dismissed. But he had something interesting to say. He says, look, he stressed that this case highlights the principal legal difficulty that surrounds digital platforms, namely that applying old doctrines to new digital platforms is rarely straightforward. He went on to say, we will soon have no choice but to address how our legal doctrines apply to highly concentrated, privately owned information infrastructure, such as digital platforms, but agreed that this is not the case to decide it on.
Is that something that the Congress should have to make a law to specify, or is that something the court would just interpret off of existing law?
Well, look, if Congress doesn't act to do something, then yes, the court is going to have to come in, and this is what would happen. The court would come in, and they'd try to say, okay, based upon the doctrines of law up to this point, we believe that, however they rule, this is the interpretation of the law as it relates to this, at which point Congress has their choice. They can either agree with what the Supreme Court has said, or they can go in, which happens on occasion, and say, we're going to pass a law, and usually in the bill it says this is to specifically address the holding in whatever case it was, because this is what we want the law to be. The court doesn't make the law, they just interpret it. And if Congress isn't going to clear it up for them, then they're stuck with it. Right?
Right.
And so that's kind of how this went forward. But I thought it was interesting, though, because this case has been pending, and Denise, Do you know how cases are selected? Everybody files. We have all these cases filed before the Supreme Court. Do you know the process by which the Supreme Court goes about selecting which cases they're going to?
They actually meet and confer, and they discuss the cases and the what are the legal issues and what precedent should be set on. Are these facts the right type of facts to base a decision that we want as an outcome? Because a lot of times they're not going to take something up that's so factually different than everything else that it's really not going to have precedent.
So they're kind of saying, is it worth the legal time of the highest court in the land? Is that kind of what I'm hearing
you
say?
Yes, that is. Okay. And in this particular case, I mean, one could argue that they purposely sat on it. So that it would become moot, because this is the type of case that becomes moot when it involves an official who is no longer going to be in that position.
And it's a political matter, ultimately.
It could. Yeah. It could. Well, it doesn't necessarily be. It's a First Amendment right matter. Honestly, there is a very important topic or legal issue that's involved there. But the question is, should we waste our time on something that the facts no longer play out?
It's not happening anymore, right?
Exactly. Big consideration by the court, which cases they're going to take up. The other is, depending on the facts of a case, boy, if we decide this one this way, that might be great for this case, but that's going to set a really bad legal precedent for other cases. And, you know, it's kind of like, I could throw the pebble in this side of the pond, but I don't want the waves on the other side of the pond. It'd be better not to throw the pebble. And I think that is how they view a lot of those cases. We're done with the first half hour of the third hour at the bottom of the hour. Don't go away. You're listening to Radio Law Talk. Online at RadioLawTalk.com or on your favorite radio station. We'll be back.
Thanks, Todd. Remember, everyone, that Radio Law Talk is live 9 to noon Pacific time every Saturday morning, so you can catch us live on our website then, and we post every episode of every show at RadioLawTalk.com. And what do you call it now, the podcast? That's right. We'll be right back. Hold on.
All advertising for legal services on Radio Law Talk is strictly for the state or states in which the advertiser is licensed. For more information, go to RadioLawTalk.com.
Jason Rossback here with Fred Penny, managing attorney from Penny & Associates Injury Lawyers. Now, Fred, what type of cases are you dealing with now, and what sets you apart?
Jason, we help people with all types of personal injury cases. We're former insurance company trial lawyers. We understand the other side, which gives us a distinct advantage over our competition. Remember, we don't get paid unless we win.
That's Penny & Associates Injury Lawyers with locations throughout California. For a free consultation, go to pennylawyers.com or give them a call, 1-800-616-4-LAW. That's PennyLawyers.com.
At TicketChocolate.com, we believe that simplicity is best. We also know that chocolate is one of life's finest things that can help you savor your greatest moments. Late night visits with old friends, overdue romantic moments, and quiet mornings all to yourself. See their wide variety, like hot chocolate sticks or creamy marshmallows, and a lot more at TicketChocolate.com. They remind busy people like you to take time for the pleasure small things can give. TicketChocolate.com, where simplicity is best.
This is Denise Dirks. We can represent clients in divorce, legal separation, child and spousal support, custody, termination of parental rights, step-parent adoptions, guardianships, and even conservatorship matters. Call 1-877-886-7186 for a consultation.
The law offices of Denise L. Dirks provide family law services in Northern California. When the law affects your family, call 877-886-7186. The family of attorneys at Denise L. Dirks is here to help.
My name is Frederick Penny of Penny & Associates Injury Lawyers. I've assembled an excellent team of highly experienced personal injury trial lawyers. We understand the other side, which gives us a distinct advantage over our competition. At Penny & Associates, we will aggressively represent you and your family when someone has been injured in an accident. Remember, we don't get paid unless we win.
For a free initial consultation, go to PennyLawyers.com or call 1-800-616-4-LAW and ask for Frederick, Stuart, Rob, Kevin, Kent, or Will. That's Frederick Penny at Penny & Associates Injury Lawyers, 1-800-616-4-LAW.
USA Radio News with Wendy King.
The world is remembering Britain's Prince Philip.
With grateful hearts, we remember the many ways in which his long life has been a blessing to us.
The Dean of Windsor led the service. He was laid to rest at Windsor Castle following a nationwide minute of silence. His four children walked behind the hearse along with Prince William and Harry. The Queen traveled by car. Due to the pandemic, the Queen sat alone and only 30 mourners were in attendance. a grim milestone as Johns Hopkins University reports over 3 million people have died from the coronavirus worldwide, with setbacks in the global vaccination effort and an increase in cases in countries such as India, France, and Brazil. Officials now say cases are still going up and not down in many places. This is USA Radio News.
There's so much hand sanitizer on the market, but beware. Not all hand sanitizers are created equal. That's why you want to use 2020 Safe Hand Sanitizer. You can trust the hand sanitizer on 2020safe.net to be made with the highest quality ingredients. American made with American ingredients, employing Americans. Log on now to 2020safe.net and order your 1 liter today. Normally $29.99, but reduced to $19.99. So hurry while supplies last and receive a bonus. That's right. You'll receive a 30-count bottle of Immune Booster, a $39.95 value, free, by using code GCN at checkout. Right now, click 2020safe.net. That's 2020safe.net to get our 1 liter bottle of high-quality hand sanitizer with your free bonus, a 30-count bottle of Immune Booster valued at $39.95. Remember to enter GCN at checkout, and the bonus is yours, free, 2020safe.net.
Tejibo Tea Club's original Pure Pau D'Arco Super Tea helps build the red corpuscles in the blood which carry oxygen to our organs and cells. Our organs and cells need oxygen to regenerate themselves. The immune system needs oxygen to develop, and cancer dies in oxygen. So the tea is great for healthy people, and it can truly be miraculous for someone fighting a potentially life-threatening disease due to an infection, diabetes, or cancer. A one-pound package of tea is $34.95 plus shipping. To order, please visit shopsupertea.com. That's shop, S-H-O-P, super, S-U-P-E-R, T-T-E-A.com. So the complete website is shopsupertea.com, or call us at 818-984-6100, Monday through Saturday, 9 to 5 California time. That's shopsupertea.com at 818-984-6100.
Radio Law Talk. I like that show.
Time to get back to Radio Law Talk on RadioLawTalk.com and on your favorite radio station.
So when we wrapped up the last segment, going to the bottom of the hour break, we're talking about the U.S. Supreme Court and, you know, how they need to be circumspect when they go in and take a case, the type of cases that they take, because it could have long-term effects depending on how that case is interpreted and how, what type of precedent that sets. And here's an example. A brief description of the Fourth Amendment to the Constitution. People, essentially, law enforcement can only go into your house or a place where you have a reasonable expectation of privacy if they have a warrant. They have to get a warrant that establishes probable cause to go in and go into your house or seize items, and nobody will be subject to search and seizure without a warrant. And previously, I think it was back in 1977, 1973, when the Supreme Court at the time carved out an exception to the warrant requirement if the police were engaged in what's called a community caretaking function. So if they're acting for the benefit or the welfare of the community, if they're doing something like that, then that is an exception to the warrant requirement. Well, okay, so that was a decision that came out in the 70s, and the question now is, well, what does that really allow law enforcement to do? Because if gone unchecked, all a law enforcement officer would ever have to do to get into your house is, well, I'm performing a community caretaking function. I'm coming in. And the slippery slope with that would be the complete obliteration of all Fourth Amendment rights, because I don't need a warrant. It's community caretaking. That's what law enforcement would say. Well, so there was a case that comes out of, where was this at? It's the Cranston case. And I'm having a brain freeze now about where it originated. But essentially, well, What happened was his wife had called law enforcement. Law enforcement came out, and she was concerned about Mr. Crantison's mental state, and he had some guns. But at this point, he hadn't done anything wrong. He hadn't violated the law at all. Nothing had happened. She was just concerned about his mental state. And so there was this quasi-bargain struck with law enforcement, which was, because the cop said, well, tell you what, you need to go down and be evaluated for your mental acuity and your any mental health problems. And he said, look, I will go down and get myself evaluated so long as you don't go into my house and take my guns. They said, okay. He goes to the mental health facility. And then the cops went in the house with the wife, took him in. She showed him where the guns were, and the officers confiscated the guns. And this started at the trial level. You took the guns you shouldn't have, and then it made its way up. And now the Supreme Court has to decide whether or not the officers were justified in seizing the firearms based on a community caretaking exception.
Right, and I think they would have to find that there was either consent. So one of the issues is going to be, could the wife give the consent necessary without a warrant?
Mm-hmm.
Or was there exigent circumstances such that the police had to act very quickly in to help the community, to make sure and protect the community, and all of that, such that there was not enough time to get the warrant? And, you know, the arguments are, you know, both for and against that issue. And I think, my own opinion is, I think that the consent of the wife is not going to be enough. It was not her, they were not her guns.
Yeah, I think it's a twofold analysis. First, how do the officers get into the home without the warrant? That's one, is how do they get into the home without a warrant? And the second thing is, how do they seize this guy's personal property without a warrant? I think that the consent of the wife, any occupant of the home can grant consent to law enforcement to enter. So I think them going into the home is not a problem. The problem that they've got is the seizure of the guns. They can't argue that they seized them with the consent of the firearm owner, because he specifically said, I'll go, but don't take my guns. And because she doesn't own the guns, she can't grant consent to that.
Right.
The only way the officers could seize the guns is if they believed that their community caretaking function, coupled with the exigency of the circumstance, we leave them here, something terrible, something bad's going to happen. I don't know if they can make that leap.
I don't think so either. I don't think the facts support it. Because, one, he may have been suicidal, you know, or they thought he was going to be harmful to himself, but there's not a clear understanding in here that he is going to be harmful to other people, such that he would take the guns and hurt somebody. And it just is a big leap, in my opinion.
And the thing is this case was hotly debated on the floor of the Supreme Court by the judges. And, you know, one thing I think that we're seeing here, we've seen it since the appointment of the most recent judge. For all of the people, Justice Barrett, for all of the people that say, oh, my gosh, this person was appointed by a conservative, so they're going to rule conservative on all their issues. This person was appointed by a liberal president. They're going to be liberal on all their issues. You know, you can't make that prediction, because we have seen it all over the map in terms of how justices rule. And it's not often that they appear to be, well, I'm just going to side with the political leanings of the president that appointed me. No, it just doesn't happen that way. But a lot of issues were raised here. This was argued before the Supreme Court, and I'll be curious to see how the court rules when the decision is finally issued. As a criminal defense attorney, I'm keenly interested in this, because this is going to affect how evidence was procured against any of my potential clients.
It also goes to the liability of the police officers involved, too, because this is what Chief Justice Roberts said. He proposed a scenario in which the neighbors called the police after growing concern about an elderly dinner guest who was usually punctual but failed to arrive. If officers found that person's back door open and went in to conduct a wellness check, would they be protected from liability for not obtaining a warrant at first? I mean, that's one of the questions that's also involved in this case. I think this is an extremely important case, and it's going to have I'm just as concerned about it that it's going to go too far, but at the same time, we have a very conservative court, so I'm not sure it's going to go too far.
Isn't that a silly question? Because the guy doesn't show up, he's not suspected of a crime.
He's not suspected of a crime.
No, but they may think something happened to him because his back door's open, he didn't come punctual, he's always punctual, he's older. I mean, all these different factors.
It's a wellness check, right?
Okay, but this is the scenario that we're looking at here, because there's one fact that you could add in that would make this. So, okay. Elderly person doesn't show up for dinner. He always shows up for dinner. He's always very punctual. The officers go over to the house. Okay. They find the back door open. They go in without a warrant to do a welfare check, and they find the elderly individual cooking meth in his kitchen. So then the question is, wait a second.
Now it's a new kind
of corn. How did you get into the kitchen? Because you don't have a warrant to come in.
And no consent.
And there's no consent.
That I get.
That's where it really comes up.
On a wellness check, I don't get it. But that, of course, I get. Right.
And so that's where this case is really going to be one that's looked at and scrutinized. But, again, the Supreme Court had to take this one up because the last decision that they had that was really big on community caretaking function was 1970s, in the 73, 74, somewhere along in there. And so when you look at that and you see, okay, this doctrine's like 40 years old, we've had a lot of opportunity to see how this doctrine has played out, and maybe it's time to put some limitations on law enforcement's use of that.
Exactly.
Doctrine. So we'll see.
Really
we'll
good
see what
boundaries
happens.
Need to be set in place because it's time. It's been there a long time, and it's time. It, very timely issue, I think, for the Supreme Court to decide.
Sure. Yeah, and we'll stick with Fourth Amendment really quickly here. Out of Beverly Hills, down in Beverly Hills, there was a place called Safe Boxes, which is essentially a private company that offers you the security of a safety deposit box. It's all anonymous. You come in, you can store whatever you want in there, and your belongings will hopefully be safe. Well, the government has looked at that and said, wait a second. We suspect that this is being used as a way to traffic money or drugs or things like that. Nobody knows who goes in or who comes out. And so the law enforcement secured a warrant and went in and seized the boxes. Now, all of the boxes are anonymous, but here's the hitch in the giddy-up. If I had a box that was in there, it is now seized, and the only way that I can get that back is to identify myself as the owner of that box, and I completely lose the protection of the anonymity that I had. And so the question here is, again, did law enforcement go too far in being able to come in and hit the safety deposit box company? And I will say really...
First question, and second, whether or not they could also determine who the safety deposit box owners were.
That's true.
Right? So there's two elements to
that. And on the first part, I will say...
Wrong.
They got a warrant. They got a warrant to go in and get the safety deposit boxes. That lines right up with the Fourth Amendment. But the second part, that's a little difficult. We'll talk about that when we come back. We're headed to our last segment. Thank you for joining us here on Radio Law Talk. We'll be back.
When does the evidentiary tree become poisoned? More on that coming up here in just a little bit on Radio Law Talk. Don't go away.
Advertising for legal services on Radio Law Talk is strictly for the state or states in which the advertiser is licensed. For more information, go to RadioLawTalk.com.
Jason Ross.
Have you ever thought about turning your Glock, XD family, or 1911 handgun into a semi-automatic carbine? It only takes about 30 seconds. The MechTech carbine upper is classified as an accessory and can be delivered right to your doorstep with no FFL or background check required. It's the world's most versatile pistol accessory. Build your custom upper today. Simply go to handgunconversion.com. That's handgunconversion.com.
If there's a sudden disaster and you can't get to the grocery store or they're all out of food, what would you do? You'll wish you had emergency food to get you through the crisis. And that's why we're here. We're MyPatriotSupply.com, America's leading source of emergency food. Our food lasts for up to 25 years, and millions of families trust us for their disaster survival. Won't you join us? Unlike other food companies, we don't skimp on calories. Our meals give you more than 2,000 calories per day. Why? Because that's what you need to survive any challenging crisis. And right now, you can save $200 on our popular 3-month emergency food kit. Just go to MyPatriotSupply.com and place your order. We ship fast, 2 to 3 days max, and your food arrives discreetly right to your door. So order today and save $200 at MyPatriotSupply.com. That's MyPatriotSupply.com.
Do the letters IRS give you anxiety? I'm Dan Pilla. I've defended people from the IRS for more than 40 years. My book, How to Get Tax Amnesty, created the tax resolution industry and is responsible for helping hundreds of thousands of people. It can help you, too. If you're a non-filer or facing IRS enforcement right now, your case is unique. You need real help, not cookie-cutter advice. My clients get my personal attention. Buy my book at danpilla.com and get a free consultation directly with me. That's danpilla.com. Let's start solving your tax problem right now.
Get healthy, not high, with 100% pure CBD powerful natural pain relief from Veterans Vitality. GCN listeners, have you ever thought about how CBD may help you? I'm sure you have heard about the many benefits of CBD. Well, here's your opportunity to try before you buy. Created by veterans and for everyone who deserves better choices, our CBD is derived from organic hemp, grown in the USA, and third-party tested. Veterans Vitality CBD saves you as much as 25 to 50% over our competition, and a portion of all sales is contributed to veteran nonprofits and events. Many of our customers have experienced improved quality of life, help with anxiety, PTSD, and overall well-being. Our products do not contain THC. They are safe, non-addictive, effective, and 100% legal. GCN listeners, get your free trial bottle of premium CBD by simply paying shipping and handling at GCNFreeCBD.com. That's GCNFreeCBD.com. Again, GCNFreeCBD.com. Offered by Veterans Vitality Premium CBD.
Now with orders to stay at home, public health concerns, the reality of illness due to pathogens and viruses, your health is at an all-time high risk. That's why it's critical to take a proactive approach to boost your immune system. You can with new nano-colloidal silver from Americare. Our patented process with tiny silver particles, 1/100th the size of a red blood cell, allows for maximum body absorption. Americare's nano-colloidal silver effectively disinfects your body internally, attacking pathogens and viruses while supercharging your immune system. Colloidal silver is antibacterial and antiviral. Simply put, it prohibits bacterial respiration, suffocating viral cells, preventing the virus from replicating. And now, due to public health concern, Americare is authorized to offer our lowest and best price ever, around $1 a day, but supplies are limited. Purchase nano-colloidal silver now at immunesupportnow.com. That's immunesupportnow.com. These statements have not been evaluated by the Food and Drug Administration. This product is not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease. Supplies are limited.
Boys are weird. You're a whiner.
This is Radio Law Talk.
So going into the break, we were talking about the seizure by law enforcement officials, FBI, DEA, and the U.S. Postal Service investigators, where they went into U.S. private vaults, that's the name of the company in Beverly Hills, and seized, and they had a warrant, and they went in and they seized the contents of safe deposit boxes inside this private company, private vaults. And so that raises a couple of issues, because the benefit to the consumer at private vaults is that they can use these private vaults to store whatever item they want, and they do it anonymously, so it's not traced back to you. So now the lawsuit is being brought by five individuals against these governmental agencies saying, look, you violated my Fourth Amendment rights in seizing this stuff. Now law enforcement can come back and they're going to say, hey, we had a warrant, okay? Except that a warrant isn't always just facially, you're the law enforcement equivalent of get out of jail free, I can seize whatever I want. At some point, a person who's had items seized can challenge the information in the warrant to see if it's factually accurate and right. If that assertion rises to the level of probable cause. We heard a lot about this over the last 3 years with FISA courts, and I don't want to get into that, except that I will say this one thing, and this is where the warrant process is the same. When any law enforcement officer, whether it's FISA or whether it's these folks here, the FBI, DEA, and U.S. Postal Service, when they go to a judge to get the warrant signed, there is nobody representing the person being investigated or potential defendant in front of that judge. It is direct communication between law enforcement and the judge. This is what I think, and they go for it. And there's no one there to cross-examine the officer to say, hold on here, let's take a look at this. At some point in time, that will come up, maybe in a trial if they want to challenge the warrant, or as the case is pending, but not when the warrant issues.
So the judge is supposed to ask questions, is he not? Or is this a rubber stamp process?
Well, it can be a rubber stamp process, depending on what's the content. You have to remember, it doesn't necessarily mean it's true information.
Right. I get that.
For the most part, I've seen judges. Now, mind you, when I was at the DA's office here in California, we would rotate this responsibility every 2 weeks. So I would be on call for 2 weeks. And essentially, if there was any call from a law enforcement officer saying, hey, we need a warrant for this, it could come 3 o'clock in the morning. They would send me a copy of the warrant. I would look at it and make sure that the elements were met and, you know, give my opinion about whether or not this meets the standard of probable cause that a warrant needs. And then once I signed off on it, the law enforcement officer would take it to the judge, and the judge would read it.
And make that same decision, right?
Make the same decision. So if the judge had questions, usually it was because they would look at the affidavit and maybe they'd be questioning whether or not there's enough information in the affidavit to support a probable cause determination. So they'd ask questions, and if there wasn't enough information, right, then the officer would have to go back and redraft
the
affidavit.
So at that moment, the prosecutor becomes an advocate for the potential
police.
Defendant, or does nobody?
No, the police. Nobody's an advocate for the person that's getting seized.
How's that okay?
Well, again, the prosecutor's not necessarily an advocate. The prosecutor is allowing a separate set of eyes to look at this warrant to say, essentially, well, okay, you want my opinion? If you take that to the judge ain't going to sign it. There's not enough there for probable cause. Or, yeah, you've got enough there for probable cause. It's like proofreading.
He's a vetting source, right?
Exactly.
But in this case, it's kind of like the government just said, this U.S. vault company is just a criminal activity, and, you know, just kind of made this idea about it. And now U.S. vault is saying, wait a second, we don't allow, it's in our contracts, we don't allow illegal drugs, weapons, ammunition, hazardous materials, illegal contraband, illegally obtained property, or any products therefrom. And they said, we conduct searches with trained dogs to sniff out any drugs and activity. So we are trying to enforce the legality of our business, in essence. And that information would not have been before the judge when the judge signed off on the warrant.
Well, that doesn't seem fair to me.
It is. It's a little difficult. When Denise and I were talking about this over the break, and in my opinion, the way I read this case, because law enforcement is saying, no, you're not going to get your property back unless you come forward and identify yourself as one of these anonymous people. And I have to assume that in addition to perhaps contraband that was seized, there are probably a lot of non-contraband-oriented things that were seized from individuals that aren't breaking the law or anything. But now they have to come forward and identify themselves to get their property back that the government has seized. And from my two cents, that seems backwards for this reason. We inherently, under the Constitution, you know, the inalienable rights among them, life, liberty, the pursuit of happiness. So that liberty thing is huge here. I have the right to liberty because I exist. Everybody
right.
does. And so the government should be the one having to come in to say, this is where that right needs to be curtailed so that we can get this thing of yours, so we can seize it. And to require people to come in and identify themselves to get a return of their property when that property is not suspected of having any part, parcel,
nothing
no instrumentality
of that,
untainted. Law enforcement should just have to put that back in the safe deposit box and let them come and get it and not have to disclose their identity.
Well, my thinking is now, if they confiscate stuff from homeless people that are camping illegally, that take the confiscated stuff, in a couple of smaller communities, take it to the police storage yard, mark it to whom it belongs so they can come and reclaim it and give it back, or in this case, the storage company, they could have given it to the storage company. Here, this is from locker 14B. Give it back to the correct owner, please. This is 14C. I mean, they could have done something like that if they wanted to take the trouble.
If law enforcement cannot identify the contents of a specific safety deposit box as being an instrumentality of a crime, should absolutely be put back.
Yeah. Yes.
Absolutely it should be put back.
And you should not have to provide your identity to get your property back.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Just give it to the storage company and say, go put it back.
So it's not just a Fourth Amendment issue. It's also a Fifth Amendment issue, the right not to incriminate yourself.
Right.
Well,
right?
Actually, the right to remain silent.
Yes.
And I want to draw a distinction between remaining silent and saying something that incriminates you. Because there may be things that, look, there may be a reason why somebody wanted an anonymous safe deposit box that had nothing to do with an illegality. But if the contents, even though not illegal, were ever made public, were ever known, it might cause embarrassment. You're right. The most innocuous thing. Some guy loves this girl, buys a huge engagement ring, pops it in the safe deposit box for safekeeping until he's ready to propose to the girl. Now he's got to go and identify himself, and the cat's out of the bag because it was made news that he got. That's a hypothetical example, but still,
sure,
you're requiring people to give up their rights in order to get your property back when the government didn't necessarily have a justification for seizing that property.
And how does that differ from a bank vault? If they get away with this, they could go to your bank and go through a safety deposit box if they wanted to.
The difference is anonymity.
Anonymity, yes.
Thank you.
Yeah.
because that's the biggest difference, because at the bank vault, if they get a warrant, they're going to have your name on it, right? So you can go to the bank, and the bank's going to identify your box. So that's the difference. This implies, it also implies a right to privacy, because they're expecting that this is going to be private contents that are not going to be disclosed, and they don't want to be associated with those contents.
That was a pretty wide net, wasn't it, Todd?
It was. I would be really curious. Now, the warrant is under seal, but I would really be curious to read that affidavit to see how law enforcement justified getting a warrant, how they went to a judge and say, look, judge, we don't know who any of this stuff belongs to, but we know there's illegal stuff in there.
I totally agree.
How do they do that? Mm-hmm. And that, that is the fight that these plaintiffs have in front of them to get those documents to prove, no, there was no probable causes to me, and I shouldn't have to identify myself to get my property back that was not lawfully seized.
That's an interesting question, but now it's time for us to get to the end of the show and start wrapping up with your quick takes. Mr. Kuhn, do you have a quick take?
Based on his arguments in court, I'm waiting for Robert De Niro to change his name to Robert No De Niro.
Way to put the international flavor into the show there, Todd. And Denise, you have one?
Well, remember when we were talking about Epstein a while back and we had the Mile High Club subpoena?
Yeah.
And they were trying to get all the people that were in that Mile High Club flying with him? Well, now they've changed it to the Vile High Club.
Vile High Club.
Yikes. Folks, thank you for tuning in this week to Radio Law Talk. If you didn't catch all the show, you can catch us on our podcast. It should be up in a couple days. Fred, looking forward to you coming back. And that's all, folks.
You have been listening to RadioLawTalk.com, a copyrighted presentation of Radio Law Talk, Incorporated.
Hey everybody, if you've ever thought about heirloom beans as a storable survival food, I've got great news. In fact, I'll bet it's the best news you've heard in a while. Here's the thing. We've just received a fresh batch of gourmet heirloom beans, survival soup beans. These beans are gorgeous, highly nutritious, and above all, with no hesitation whatsoever, the best tasting beans in the entire world. The best part? We've dropped the price by 33% this week for listeners who know higher food prices are coming and want an inflation hedge you can actually eat if you want to. Gets even better. With your permission and with the high regard for your health and well-being, I also want to send you 2 pounds of what we think is the single most underrated superfood in the world, period. Go to soupbeansurvival.com, that's soupbeansurvival.com, and discover the real reason we're giving this unusual superfood away. At soupbeansurvival.com, that's soupbeansurvival.com.